Atlantic to the Pacific, across the islands of the Caribbean, from mountain crest, from canyons to the clouds, and into the cosmos. We're pumping wattage high and low, plus streaming worldwide on the internet, and keeping you company tonight. It's the place to relax and hang out. I'm your host, Joshua P. Warren, and this is Speaking of Strange, giving you the latest and discussing the weirdest. We've assembled the finest team of reporters and the most intriguing guests, and that's why we are your favorite hub in a wild world. So keep it tuned right here. Welcome back to the program, and let me remind you, tonight's program is brought to you by the Sunshine Simple Solar Generator for the home, the world's most powerful solar generator for the price. Save yourself $150 on shipping and handling if you go to sunshinesimple.com right now. You know, I have been talking about all of the amazing UFO and USO imagery that has been coming from Puerto Rico. That's one of the big reasons that I'm down here doing extensive research. And there is just a flood of more imagery that is on the way, I assure you. But I've talked to you in the past about a man that I met down here named Daniel Velez. He is a lifeguard, and he is a contactee. He has been receiving messages from the visitors, whether they be extraterrestrials or interdimensionals or both. And they have been instructing him on when to go out to see their crafts and how to document them. And not too long ago, I posted a still from some footage that he shot here at the Boquerón Beach at joshuapwarren.com. Now, in that footage, the still I posted shows a craft that's hovering in the sky. That's very weird. It's almost like one of these cigar-type, almost blimp-like craft. But here's what makes this so bizarre. Again, this was a still of video footage. And Daniel Velez gave me the video clip. And I got this when C. Eric Scott was down here. And, of course, Mr. Scott is a professional producer and videographer. And so we loaded the footage into Eric's professional editing software. And that's when we were able to see something truly striking and startling that you can see right now if you go to joshuapwarren.com. We now have posted for you a clip that shows this craft literally emerging from the water. It happens literally in a split second. And when you go to joshuapwarren.com, you will see this is looped over and over in this little clip. I mean, it looks almost like that we've just taken two different pictures and stuck them together, but actually we're looking at two stills that are from a single event that was happening in real time. And what you can see when you watch the video is first this craft just breaking the surface as it comes out of the water. So in the first still, you can see it partly in and partly out of the water. And in the second still, you will see that in a split second, it is in the sky. So these crafts that are emerging from the water down here are doing so at incredible lightning speed. And I also have posted for you two close-up stills. One is a still that is a close-up of how the craft looked just as it was coming out of the water. In fact, you can see what looks like some of the water actually sort of starting to run off of the craft as it's lifting from the surface. And then, boom, it's in the sky. And then you can see a close-up of this thing in the sky. It's a weird-looking thing because it has an odd shape. It almost appears like it might have two, for lack of a better term, appendages that are coming from it. I don't know if these are antennas or what we're looking at.
I'm just looking at it right now. It looks like on the first one, it almost looks like it could be a bird-shaped something down toward the bottom right there.
Well, you know, the funny thing is that this is in actual video time.
Really?
Yeah. So what you're seeing is that this is, it's in a split second in the water and then boom in the sky. And it would have to be moving at just an insane amount of speed to accomplish this.
Right.
In fact, when you're watching the video in real time, you can't even really see this with your naked eyes. It's happening so fast. We had to isolate these clips so that you can get a look at what's happening. And, you know, these craft, however they fly, are apparently not restricted by the conventional laws and parameters of aerodynamics. So that means they should be able to travel as quickly as they want, which is why you hear stories all the time about people seeing one of these UFOs, and then it just shoots off at an unimaginable rate of speed. And here again, you can see this thing goes from 1 second in the water, a less than a second later, it's in the sky.
Well, it looks like the initial image there looks like, one image looks like almost like a space shuttle type image. If you, like, especially that close up, you can almost see like what would be like the United States space shuttle type image in there. Then I don't. It's weird.
Yeah, what you find with a lot of these UFO pictures is that to the traditional flying saucer type designs, and yet many of these things that we are getting from footage people are shooting out in the field don't fit neatly into that sort of stereotypical prototype that we're used to imagining when it comes to a flying saucer. And on the other hand, if you scroll further down on the page, you will see, once again, an image that was shot by a man named Louis Imott in 2012 at a site nearby. That image has something that looks a little bit more like a saucer,
right,
but you still have these kind of appendage-looking things that are extending from either side. And I don't know if, when you see something like Imott's photo, if these literally are appendages or if there is some property of the craft bending space-time and gravity that's causing
a tear in the space-time continuum. It looks like the guys from Gallifrey coming back and asking to be rescued or something.
Well, it may be some kind of a gravitational distortion of the light around the craft, which is giving you this impression of some dark streaks on either side of it, in the case of the Imott photo. But this image that Daniel Velez shot, I mean, this is interesting, on a number of levels, one of which being that you actually get a little bit more perspective that, you know, you can see whatever this thing is moving from one point in the frame to another. And it's doing so quickly that it makes me think many of these USOs are moving at speeds that we simply cannot comprehend and can't come close to with any type of conventional technology. And so nobody's sure exactly what we're looking at here. It is bizarre. It is exotic. It is esoteric. And I implore everybody to go to joshuapwarren.com. There is no period after the P. Go to joshuapwarren.com while I still have these posted. And just look at this yourself, because this is the first time this has ever been posted on the Internet. And it may be the first good glimpse that we've gotten of one of these USOs coming out of the water and becoming a UFO. So what we're talking about is it changing from an unidentified submerged object to an unidentified flying object. And in fact, Daniel Velez is also the man who gave me a symbol that he claims is an antenna for these visitors. And I am forbidden from sharing with the public what this symbol is, But it was after he gave me that symbol that I went to the Laguna Cartagena, the UFO Lagoon, along with Eric and Missy and Ron Hill and another person whose name may or may not be okay to put on the radio, so I won't do it. And we saw what looked like some kind of a silvery ball of light that was dotting and bouncing around on the surface of the Laguna. So there is a very weird connection between all these things. And, you know, you look at something like this, and you wonder whether or not we actually are seeing some type of legitimate footage of a UFO, USO here that has some connection to maybe the secret government bases and the clandestine military work that's happening here on the island. And then I see a story about this guy, Edward Snowden, who has been leaking these NSA documents. And apparently some of his new leaks actually include pictures of UFOs. Now, let me pause by saying, you know, this is something that we've wondered about a lot over the years. I mean, I remember back when Julian Assange, yes, the WikiLeaks guy, yeah, you know, when he was releasing stuff, everybody wondered, was he going to have some material, some government material related to UFOs that would be leaked out? Well, I never saw anything like that from Assange, but now, of course, he's in trouble for what he did. He's holed up in the, I think, Ecuadorian, or is it Ecuador or Venezuela? I think it's Ecuadorian embassy there in England. And now this guy, Edward Snowden, he is in Russia, more or less seeking asylum there. And we're going to take a break. When we come back, I'm going to tell you a little bit more about the UFO pictures that are apparently in the Edward Snowden leaked NSA documents. And little by little, it's starting to seem like this may be the year when we're actually starting to get some confirmation, maybe from the visitors themselves, but also government research into those visitors, sort of clarify just what the hell's going on here. It's the show where the unusual becomes usual. I'm Joshua P. Warren. You're listening to Speaking of Strange.
Can you tell a green field from a cold steel rail? A smile from a... Thank you.
And it's called Speaking of Strange. I'm your host, Joshua P. Warren, here in the Bermuda Triangle, keeping my finger on the pulse of the weirdest place in the world and reporting it back to you. Before we get on to this story about the leaked NSA documents that include UFO photos, take a moment, my friends, and imagine a box that can make your wishes come true. Does it sound unbelievable? Do you know over the years books have been burned and people have gone to prison for discussing this? Why? Because millions of people around the world say it works. And I'm talking about the Wishing Machine Radionics Box. These are extremely rare, and for a limited time, you can get one. Go right now to joshuapwarren.com and click the link to watch a free video about the Wishing Machine and what it can do for your health, relationships, finances, and more. The Wishing Machine can help with most any problem. Now, again, you can't find these every day, so go right now to joshuapwarren.com and watch the free video to learn how the Wishing Machine can help you, and you'll see why I and countless people around the world use one every day, and that's no joke. So Edward Snowden, again, he is the guy who had a nice cushy job there in Hawaii working through some contracted position for the NSA and decided to up and go, I think, to China first and work with some British journalist and release an enormous amount of information documenting just how extensive the U.S. domestic spying program has been. Basically, they've been apparently recording or documenting all of our communication. I mean, phone calls, emails, texts. It's almost incomprehensible how much the U.S. government has been documenting the activity of our own people. And, you know, we can debate the pros and cons of that, but bottom line is it does seem to be unconstitutional by most people's standards that every single communication you have is being tapped. Well, the latest release of Edward Snowden's leaked NSA documents includes a PowerPoint from a British communications department regarding online covert operations and deception. And a few of the slides inexplicably include pictures of UFOs. Let's see here. There's an article which includes the release of the documents and describes their significance. Let's see here. Over the last several weeks, I worked with NBC News to publish a series of articles about dirty trick tactics used by a previously secret unit, the Joint Threat Research Intelligence Group. These were based on classified documents presented to the NSA and other partners. Today, we are publishing another new document in full entitled The Art of Deception, Training for Online Covert Operations. So basically what they're saying here is that they're using honey traps, apparently, as they call them, trying to lure people into compromising situations using sex and destructive viruses. And somehow or other, these images of UFOs are being interjected. Now, nobody's sure what the role of the UFO images actually is. They're not sure if this is to create false flag operations, which means that these could be fake images which are being used to draw people into conversations, or if they're being used for something more devious. But the UFO pics are found in a section called, quote, Influence and Information Operations, end quote. Again, it's difficult to decipher while they are there. Some say that it might relate to pointing out people's belief systems, but others say maybe this has to do with some other type of tactic that is trying to integrate itself into public opinion about these craft. So whenever I see stories like this, it always reminds me of the interview that I did years ago with Nick Pope, who for years was in charge of the British ministry that oversaw UFO-type claims and reports. And, you know, he was on Speaking of Strange, and I asked him very directly what the protocol would be if there actually were a visitation from UFOs, extraterrestrials, that the government had to deal with. And he said, and I'm paraphrasing here, but it's pretty close to what he replied. He said that when it came to many of these issues, during meetings discussing this, he and his colleagues felt that most of the information was, quote, too sensitive to commit to paper, end quote. And that has always stood out in my mind because it opens up this whole door of possibilities. It opens up this sort of sense that there are things that the governments are dealing with that are so profound, so powerful, that they themselves realize that they can't even document it. Because if they do that, there's a risk that it will be somehow leaked, shared. And so how much of the government functions that way? How much of our governments around the world, well, let me put it this way. How much of the stuff they deal with is content that is so secret that there is no record of it? It's stuff that's almost passed along, you know, through oral tradition from one trusted government figure to another, verbally, because there's just no way that they would take a chance of putting this stuff on paper. It's a very effective way of protecting secrets. That's how many secret societies have operated all throughout the years. You put nothing on paper so that everything is simply passed from one person to another. And even if one person spills the beans, all you have to say is, well, this guy's a liar, or this guy is insane, or this guy has some other dark agenda. And it makes it very, very easy to discredit anybody who might end up being a loose cannon. So when you see something like this story, saying that there are UFO photos in this NSA leaked release. Again, we don't have the full context here, but the very fact that it exists is significant. And, you know, we should be mindful of that when we are discussing whatever connection the government may have, especially coming from my point of view here in Puerto Rico, where I see instances over and over of government figures somehow being related, however peripherally, to these encounters people are having with ETs that to them are just very spiritual experiences. And yet we know if there is some contact with a greater consciousness, the governments are always going to be there to look into it and see if they can exploit it for some technological means. This goes back to some extent, thousands of years. We're going to take another break, but when we come back, I have some information for you that actually includes references to what you might think of as the Nephilim. Okay, these are the figures that are talked about in the Bible and other ancient texts about fallen angels, beings from beyond, that once came down here and made a very direct impact on planet Earth and might help explain some of the mysteries that we deal with today. We're trying to uncover the truth about the history of interaction between humans and ETs. I'm Joshua P. Warren. Stick around for more of that here on Speaking of Strange. Yeah. Speaking of strange, I am your host, Joshua P. Warren. And, you know, I was telling you guys that we can't keep up the free shipping and handling option on the Sunshine Simple Generators. Well, same deal goes for the Wishing Machine Radionics boxes. We've got a free shipping and handling promo going on that right now, and that's going to be ending soon. So this is your notice. I'm giving it to everybody. I am going to be traveling later this month, going to Boise, Idaho to do the George Norrie thing, and then I have a TV program I need to shoot, and then I'll be gone in May to do the Parahistory Con in upstate New York. And so April is the last period of time that I have on my schedule right now to do more expeditions down here in Puerto Rico. So I'm taking signups for April right now. You can go to paranormalpuertorico.com. And I read this before on the show, but I'm going to read it one more time because it's worth it. This is a review that Linda Kladowski gave of her expedition here in January. She said, having just gone through what was literally the worst 6 months of my life, I had doubts that anything could really give me peace of mind and restore my psyche to a state of hopefulness. Well, I was wrong. The East Coast trip to Puerto Rico not only refreshed my mind, but also renewed my spirit and left me with a sense of wonder and a knowing that we can always go somewhere to recharge and remember who we are. You find yourself surrounded by all the beauty and ambiance of old San Juan, trekking through a rainforest, exploring caves, experiencing one of the world's bioluminescent bays, standing atop the windiest point in old San Juan, overlooking a turquoise blue ocean, wandering through the forts of El Moro and San Cristobal. All of this and much, much more, not to mention what they can do with rum. The beauty and mystery of this island is truly beyond description. You simply have to experience it. But when it comes to telling the story and taking you on this journey, no one does it like Joshua Warren. Go on this journey if you possibly can. It might just be a turning point for you. So go to ParanormalPuertoRico.com if you would like to join me as I take you on a personal adventure in April, taking those signups right now, and I'm only going to take the most 4 or 5 people. I mentioned before the break the idea of the Nephilim, the fallen angels that you read about in biblical and other ancient texts. And here's an interesting story that may have a relationship to that. It's about a place in Peru called Paracas. Now, this is a desert peninsula on the south coast of Peru. And an archaeologist there made an amazing discovery in 1928. a massive and elaborate graveyard containing tombs filled with the remains of individuals with the largest elongated skulls found anywhere in the world. They've come to be known as the Paracas skulls. In total, they found more than 300 of these, which are believed to date back around 3,000 years. A DNA analysis has now been conducted on one of the skulls. An expert, Brian Forster, has released preliminary information regarding them. Now, he says it's well known that most cases of skull elongation are the result of cranial deformation, head flattening, or head binding, in which the skull is intentionally deformed by applying force over a long period of time. Now, that's usually achieved by binding the head between two pieces of wood or binding in cloth. However, while cranial deformation changes the shape of the skull, it does not alter its volume, weight, or other features that are characteristic of a regular human skull. These skulls in Paracas, however, are different. Their cranial volume is up to 25% larger and 60% heavier than conventional human skulls, meaning they could not have been intentionally deformed through head binding or flattening. They also contain only one parietal plate rather than two. So the fact that the skull's features are not the result of cranial deformation means the cause of the elongation is a mystery and has been for decades now. Now, these samples consist of hair, including roots, a tooth, skull bone, skin. These samples were taken, these samples were sent to the late Lloyd Pye, whom I've interviewed on Speaking of Strange, founder of the Star Child Project, who delivered the samples to a geneticist for DNA testing. And now that these results are back, they say it's pretty profound. Quote, it had mitochondrial DNA with mutations unknown in any human, primate, or animal known so far. But a few fragments I was able to sequence from this sample indicate that if these mutations will hold, we are dealing with a new human-like creature, very distant from Homo sapiens, Neanderthals, and Denisovans, end quote. So these implications they are claiming are huge. Forrester wrote, I'm not sure it will even fit into the known evolutionary tree. He added that if the Paracas individuals were so biologically different, they would not have been able to interbreed with humans. And so this is why many people right now are wondering if this supports the biblical account of the Nephilim. And, of course, the Nephilim refers to these giants, these fallen angels that bred, according to the Bible, with women, which is pretty weird. But, you know, when you look back at the biblical text, even if you don't take those texts literally, we can presume that all ancient texts may have some element of truth in them because people have good imaginations, and yet you see these consistencies in cultures all around the world regarding the things that they were talking about at that time, long before they had a good, clear means of transmitting information. They didn't even have a good means of communicating with each other because the languages didn't have translations. And yet what you find is that people talk about these beings that came down and were almost intermediaries between those in the sky and those here on planet Earth. And, you know, the Bible says something along the lines of we will create man in our image. Okay, it's a plural statement. In our image. And then the next thing you know, there are beings that are coming down here and having these illegal, if you will, relationships with human women. Now, what that makes you think is that if the humans were created to look similar to the beings that created their DNA, then that is why they would still be sexually attractive to those beings. So that is to say, if humans were created as some completely different type of DNA strand that didn't look anything similar to those beings, well, there you would imagine there wouldn't be some kind of sexual impulse there. But if they look close enough, now we can get it, because there's evidence that, for example, Homo sapiens and Neanderthals did mate, even though they were not the same type of creature. They look similar enough to each other, they would mate. And all this tends to lead us into this direction of thinking that at one time, human genes were a little bit different than they are now. This does not defy anything related to who God is or what God is. If you believe that there is a God that created everything, fine. That doesn't have anything to do with the idea that genes can get manipulated over time. And so people who are like talking about this ancient astronaut type stuff and relating it to the Bible are not trying to replace the concept of God the Creator with the concept of gene manipulation. They're simply saying that gene manipulation may have taken place within history and that we've been tweaked with a little bit ourselves. Some people think that's how Bigfoot comes into the picture. We're going to take a break. When we come back, I have a Bigfoot story for you. It's from Michigan. And try to guess what Bigfoot's favorite food might be. When we come back, I will tell you according to this story. I'm Josh Warren. You're listening to Speaking of Strange. Number two. on tonight. Speaking of strange, coming up next hour, well, we call it the Dark 30 Hour. And that's when we dig into some of the more outrageous and controversial news, not for the kiddies, not for the easily offended. So stick around if that's your cup of tea. Some of the rest of you may not want to hear that type of content, but it's, well, it's supposedly real news, and we're just passing it along. Oh, my goodness. Bigfoot. Bigfoot's getting very popular again, and, you know, I'm kind of surprised, frankly, that Bigfoot continues to be so popular. And in my opinion, it's kind of a sad statement about our society that we're learning more and more and more about documenting things and being a skeptical, reasonable, rational civilization. And yet, there still seem to be a lot of people out there who believe that Bigfoot is some kind of an undiscovered primate that's always just hiding behind, you know, that stump in your backyard with a lampshade on his head or whatever, and that, you know, if you have the right bait and the right trap, you're going to catch him. And I know some very, very smart people who just continue to believe that, and there's just no way, in my opinion, that Bigfoot could be a normal biological organism. There's just no way. But he's more popular than ever. And here's a story from Breckenridge, Michigan. A 52-year-old Breckenridge man came to the Midland Law Enforcement Center armed with evidence, including photo albums, empty food containers, dirt, and alleged Bigfoot scat, to ask for help verifying the existence of the mythical creature. The man, named Anthony Padilla, spoke to a sheriff's deputy, explaining that he accidentally awoke the Bigfoot spirit by knocking branches against trees to break them into smaller pieces. This began when he moved onto his 17-acre property in 1997. Padilla had a serious sighting 7 years ago when he thought he saw a man in a ghillie suit hunting. But when they locked eyes, the, quote, being began to fade and turn into a mist. The mist then reformed into a white-tailed deer and ran away into the woods, end quote. Okay, let me pause for a second. As crazy as that sounds, that actually is more believable to me than the idea that there is an ape running around out there. Because Bigfoot has to be some kind of a spiritual being, some type of an apparitional type thing, because there's no other way that we would not have found one by now.
Well,
there's just no other
way. You've always said that, you think there's a connection between UFOs and, like, mystical beings, or not mystical beings, but kind of like extraterrestrials and Bigfoot, and or plane shifters and Bigfoot.
Absolutely. I mean, that, to me, that has always seemed like the only way that we can bring some legitimacy to this. And then this story goes on to say, Anthony believes Bigfoot is not ape or mammal at all, but a spiritual creature that can shapeshift. But when it takes physical form, it eats pizza and defecates. End quote. So he says that Bigfoot has been stealing his pizza, and that's a crime. So he is looking for DNA proof of this Bigfoot that's been stealing his pizza. They say that he orders pizza, and I guess he'll leave it around on his porch or something, and Bigfoot comes and steals it. That's convenient.
Is it Bigfoot or the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles?
So, you know, we're getting back into this arena like, I like where the guy is coming from, saying Bigfoot is non-physical. I'm with you there. But he's coming through time and space to eat your pizza?
Hey, maybe I'm not so arrogant that I will claim I understand everything, but again, something just feels a little bit fishy here. We're going to take a break. When we come back, it will be the dark, dirty hour, and we're going to spend the last hour of the show tonight digging into some of the more outrageous, controversial, and some would consider offensive material, not for the kiddies, I assure you that. I'm Joshua P. Warren. Stick around for that on Speaking of Strange.